The night was cold, mid-40s maybe, and the rain kept falling. I peeled my wet socks off and laid them like strips of raw bacon on the floor of the tent and climbed into my $12 sleeping bag. Not nearly drunk enough, I hugged myself and shivered. Next to me, my cousin Ken snored and flounced and kicked the way he had in our childhood, talking in his sleep and somehow managing to get nearly crossways in the tiny tent. Between us lay his guitar, which he had refused to leave in the car, and the walls jostled each time we moved, rain dripping through the ceiling. Half numb from cold, I remembered hearing that if you lie very still, you'll be warmer. So I tried that. It was strange, as sleep didn't come, to comprehend that I had driven 2,500 miles from Mobile, Alabama, and wound up in Montana, the Yaak Valley. More strange, though, wasn't my being here, but that I'd had the idea to make the trip, surely and sadly the most outrageous thing I'd ever done. And yet still, I felt no magic, no myth. Lying in the dark, surrounded by wilderness, it occurred to me that all I felt was the old, familiar loneliness, and a land like this was not for the lonely. Perhaps I traveled here because I was after the Yaak, as if this valley were a place you could mine for the opposite of loneliness, whatever that is. Maybe it was wrong to come here wanting to take something rather than to give. Maybe that's true for every place. Perhaps I traveled here because I was after the Yaak, as if this valley were a place you could mine for the opposite of loneliness, whatever that is. Maybe it was wrong to come here wanting to take something rather than to give. Maybe that's true for every place. Tom Franklin, Yaak Valley, June 1990. Perhaps I had traveled here because I was after the Yaak, as if this valley were a place you could mine for the opposite of loneliness, whatever that is. Maybe it was wrong to come here wanting to take something rather than to give. Maybe that's true for every place. Tom Franklin, Yaak Valley, June 1990.
Tom, did you eventually get what you needed from this sojourn?
Yes, I did. When I got home to Mobile, somehow things had changed. I can't quite explain it, but I'd gone there with, this sounds corny, but true. I'd gone there with a kind of broken heart from a long relationship that had just ended, and I was working a crummy job in a hospital where I worked in the morgue. And I went back and somehow felt a little better about myself, I guess simply because I'd been in such a wild place, and I'd read about the Yaak Valley in Rick Bass's books Winter and in The Watch, although I don't think he called it that in The Watch, but he certainly did in his nonfiction memoir Winter, which was a book I loved. And having somehow walked around in the landscape of a book seemed to just give me a kind of hope I hadn't had before. I think that does sound kind of new agey and silly, but it was true. I came back and felt better, and a little bit of bragging here. Within about a month, was dating two different women in the hospital, and at the same time.
Did they also work in the morgue?
No. No one wanted to, curiously. I volunteered for that, and nobody else wanted to be in there.
Did you volunteer for that? Yeah?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah,
I did. That's a whole other book, I think, Tom.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to use that stuff sometime.
Yeah, no, I bet. Of all the places you could have driven to that day you set off, why head to the Yaak Valley? Were there not other places that perhaps you also felt a draw towards?
There was no place I felt a stronger draw toward. And I have to say that it was Bass's writing that did it for me. It wasn't the idea of a wild place or wilderness or anything like that. It was simply the strength of his prose. I really wanted to write, to meet the person who could write these sentences and tell these stories. I didn't go there for land. I went there, for a person, and found the land as well.
Hmm. Did you end up meeting Rick on this trip?
I did, in a strange roundabout way. When I got to the Yaak Valley, I hadn't called home, and I called home actually from Rapid City, South Dakota, and found out from my mother that Rick had been trying to call me and to tell me not to come, he was going. He had to leave unexpectedly, but I didn't find that out until I was nearly there. So I decided I'd keep going, and I went up there and found the Yak Valley, found the Dirty Shame Saloon and the Mercantile, and then found his house. And they of course weren't there. And I stood on his front porch. This might make him a little worried. There was this psychopath from Alabama driving up there. Stood on his front porch, peered in his window. And I'll never forget, I saw a music stand, and there was some of his writing on it. And I read his writing through his front window, and then got back in the car, and my cousin Kenneth and I camped out. And then the next day left and drove down through Yellowstone. Then we couldn't camp there because the campground was full. There were no vacancies in the entire park. So we drove to Idaho City, and I called home again from there. My mother said that Rick had been calling nonstop because he was sorry he had missed us, and he wanted to know how close we were to Logan, Utah, because that's where they would be the next day at noon. And I was about 4 hours away from there. So we wound up driving, and we did meet him for lunch the next day.
And so you had made some kind of contact with him then, just as an admirer of his writings before
you left?
Yeah,
I wrote him a psychopathic, like, 9-page single-spaced fan letter. And he answered very politely and sent the editor, the letter to his editor, who also wrote me a letter. And I've become friends with her since then, too.
Well, these are all brave people.
Yeah.
I mean, considering.
I wouldn't want somebody coming from the Yak Valley to meet me.
Do you answer all 9-page single-space letters now yourself that you're a writer?
I've never gotten any 9-page single-space letters, thankfully. I've gotten a couple of postcards, and yes, I did answer those.
Tom, you talk about wanting to take something from the Yak in your essay, and I'm wondering, you said that you did get something out of it. Have you given back to the Yak?
I've tried to, I get Rick's newsletter and do the writing to the Congress people, that kind of thing. I guess I don't know if I've done as much as I should have. I did go back there one other time and visited him, and he was there that time, and we had become better acquainted at that point, and I don't think he was afraid of me. And we went to his house, and he took me and two friends camping up in some really remote part of, top of some mountain. I should know the name of the mountain, and I'm sure he told me, but I forgot. And we had a great time, although it was July and really cold. And my friend David Gavin, who was with me, took sardines up there, and it was raining. And Rick went off to find, I think, some dryish firewood. And when he found some, he came back, and David had peeled open these sardines and had sardine juice dripping off of his chin. And Rick told him that, "You're up in grizzly country here, and they could smell a dead elk at like 9 miles, and they love fish, and we don't want to sleep near you tonight."
So big grizzly snack.
Yes, he was.
Point.
We put his tent far away from ours, and Rick gave him all kinds of fabulous instruction, like if you feel something, like biting your foot, just start yelling and kicking and screaming, and it probably will go away.
I don't know where I just heard this, but somebody was saying if you're in grizzly country, you don't have to worry. You don't have to outrun the grizzly. You just have to be able to outrun your companion.
Right, right. It was a great trip because Rick was showing us things, as we hiked up the mountain, and the air was so thin I could barely breathe. He showed us trees that were about 2.5 feet tall, and he said they were 40 years old, but they grew very slowly because the air was so thin up there. And we found a piece of bear scat in the trail, and he bent down and picked it up and broke it open and showed us a mouse rib inside the piece of bear scat. That was just wonderful.
So when Rick asked you to participate in this effort, to be part of this collection, what was your reaction?
I tried to write the essay immediately. He's one of my favorite writers, as I've said, and I immediately froze up and couldn't write anything. Everything I wrote sounded terrible. It was just terrifying, and finally I got the thread and followed it and pounded it out.
Well, it turned out to be really compelling.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Tom, you write in another part of your essay about how you got to the Yak for the first time. Could you Read a little from this, please.
Yes. So I'll just start and try to go slow and not squeak my chair or sniff.
Okay.
I'll do that now. Sorry. I was there in the Yak 9 years ago, before I knew what trouble the valley was in, a time when I could barely see past my own troubles. My cousin Ken and I left Mobile, Alabama, and drove 25 straight hours to Rapid City, South Dakota, and slept in a Kentucky Fried Chicken parking lot, shivering under our coats, in a rented Chrysler. The next day, Ken strummed his acoustic guitar as I drove from there into Wyoming, then Montana, higher and higher, and colder, even in July. I wore a pair of brand-new snakeskin cowboy boots, and would stop at each state line, and I'd taken pictures of the boots with my mother's camera. Every mile that clicked off the odometer was the farthest I'd been from home, so I hoped my life was being reshaped as we drove, heading into red swelling sunsets with snow-capped mountains shrugging across the horizon. It was raining, the temperature dropping, when we headed north out of Troy. Mountains all around, but often obscured by trees. We drove, the wiper swishing, until we saw a small sign that said Yak, and we turned onto a muddy dirt road, both of us worrying that the Chrysler might get stuck. Should we go back? Ken wondered aloud, but I was driving. After half an hour of skidding and steering around mud holes, I pulled the car down a hill into a campground near the river. There were several sites, all vacant, no cars or people or dogs, just mosquitoes, empty trash cans, and barbecue grills full of water. The noise of the river and, above that, the rain. "We'll never get a fire started," Ken said, glancing at the gray sky. We set up the cheap pup tent I'd brought, then silently unloaded our gear into it. We were both a little cranky from the trip and wet. We'd driven over 2,300 miles to camp in the rain. What place was worth that? "Feel like a hike?" Ken asked, opening an umbrella. "No," I told him. "I wanted a drink." The town of Yak was a few miles farther north. The mercantile had closed for the day, but the Dirty Shame was open for business. I parked the Chrysler beside a blue Nissan pickup, the only vehicle there. Inside the saloon, a man named Dick McGarry was reading a Missoula newspaper. Missoula, I thought, sitting at the bar, remembering how far south that city was from here. Cannon uncased his guitar and was plucking it while I studied the dollar bill stapled to the walls, the names of people from everywhere. We were the only customers at the time and, as it turned out, the only customers that night. McGarry set Bud Lights in front of us. "Where are you guys from?" I told him. He raised his eyebrows. "You drove here? From southern Alabama?" We both nodded. "Jesus, why?" Ken paused in his playing, and I tried to tell how I thought I needed some place like a wild valley to give me back what I couldn't put into words. I didn't explain myself very clearly, I guess. McGarry grunted and said other tourists came up here too, too damn many, that we weren't the first. "Nobody from as low as you, though," he said. I got quiet then, feeling diminished, as McGarry told us about the valley, its tiny population, the severe winters, what to do if we hiked and came across a grizzly, how to avert our eyes, slump our shoulders, and make ourselves non-threatening. "But it was the opposite," he said, "for a mountain lion. For one of those, you wave your arms and charge it." Outside, the rain was picking up, spattering the roof, the crack beneath the door flickering with lightning, low rumble of thunder rolling in from the mountains.
Tom Franklin is a writer who lives in Oxford, Mississippi. Look for his new novel, Hell at the Breach, next summer. Tom, thanks for speaking with me today.
Thank you.